Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and yes, comic books. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my compatriots. John Moltz, the man without fear, is here.
I thought we were here to talk about the Ahsoka trailer.
Sorry, record scratch inserted here. A stealth episode of A Complicated Profession where Guy English, the fear without man, is here. I don't know. Is there another good Daredevil nickname? I don't know.
No, give me a red. Give me a red.
Oh, no.
He's gone.
Yes, the Ahsoka trailer is awesome. And I was actually going to mention that. Is God, I don't know why I work with you. It's pointless. You're funnier. And you beat me to the punch every time. So I don't know. You take it away, John.
Man,
John is hosting the rest of this.
I feel like I'm being really
just by myself. I can't.
I'm being really punchy with you guys today. I don't know. I'm in an incredibly great mood. I don't know why I'm just being a jackass.
Let's ruin that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really. Come on.
Well. Yeah, I mean, this comic may do it. It's
yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. No.
Well, I mean, you know.
Yes and no.
It's got its ups and downs.
Okay, so let's preamble here. So we, as promised, we have read the run Daredevil Born Again, which is a comics run from 1986 by Frank Miller, drawn by, I apologize in advance, David Mazzucchelli.
Yeah,
I believe so.
Yeah.
Originally in Daredevil 227 through 231.
Hang on a sec, because that's part of my question, right?
Or, please.
Well, it was a question.
You have a question?
Because 231 gets you up to which one? That gets you up to Saved? Yeah, up to Saved.
Yeah,
I have them
230,
here.
I believe, is
when, I'm looking at
when he meets his mom.
I consider 232 and 233 part of
okay,
the run.
Okay, instead of follow-up, it also describes...
Because otherwise, I don't think the story comes to a really...
It's later reprinted in graphic novel format, along with the previous issue, 226, and a follow-up story arc from 232 through 233, which resolves some loose ends. Next question. Did I read those two? I'll have to go check.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you? I don't remember
because
which.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah.
Let's happens in those
right.
episodes. In
okay,
those
let's
ones,
do so, this okay. in a more.
I mean, had you read this before?
Right.
No, I have no recollection of having read this before because I did not really read Daredevil, and I haven't gone back and reread a lot of older comics because I just don't. It's not something that comes up that much. Every once in a while, I would read a run in Marvel Unlimited or something like that. And I should note, I read this in Hoopla, which is an app that lets you read stuff through your local public library, which I heavily recommend. And they have this and tons of other great graphic novel stuff in there. So I, you know, as we discussed reading this, I'd actually read it a few weeks ago because I was interested in just knowing more about the background on this whole arc. And the reason, of course, for this is because the upcoming Daredevil series on Disney Plus is subtitled Born Again. Now. I think sort of the first thing I wanted to mention about this going up is a lot of this material was adapted in the Netflix series, in particular season 3, as well as some other more smaller details were borrowed for other seasons of that show as well as other series on Netflix.
It's one of those seminal superhero works that you can't help but borrow if you're going to write the character. Like every Batman that is ever reborn has some variation on year one, right? Like they're learning the chops, they're getting beaten up. Christian Bale is going to meet Morgan Freeman and get some gadgets kind of thing. Like there's that era of it. And there's often a, like a Dark Knight Returns kind of thing, right? At least, well, Dark Knight Rises is Nightfall / Dark Knight Returns kind of combo. Spidey, until the most recent reboot, is always like an Uncle Ben thing there, right? Like, and it's always in the background. Like, this plotline, Born Again, is one of the things that makes Daredevil Daredevil now.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, he was boring as hell. It was pretty just a kind of a straight up superhero-y kind of dude.
So did you read it at the time that it came out?
I did.
Guy?
I did. Yeah, okay. I think I was working at the comic
shop.
Because
I don't think I did. I think I read it after Dark Knight came out. I want to find more by this guy, and then I went into the comic.
I remember I've got physical copies of it, and I've got a paperback.
Yes, yeah, so that's what I've got.
Yeah,
to.
And I may have pulled them after year one or Dark Knight Returns, like somewhere around, like,
yeah,
like late 80s. Yeah.
Right.
Like,
I mean, it was, you know, just a couple of years probably, but
yeah,
it was not 86.
They were in the window where they felt contemporary, right? It was like, yep. Oh man, absolutely. I missed this album. I'll go back and pick it up. And it was like a year or two ago rather than like, you know, 30 or 40. And I think I just picked something up at random. Like, I forget, probably Jay Torres, who's now a comic book writer on Teen Titans Go. I think he told me, if you like that, he had a great run on Daredevil. You should go check it out. And I picked up one at random, and it was like the Nuke one where Nuke is going bananas. And I'm like, what the hell is this? This is extreme. And I'm, God, how old am I at the time? 14, 15, exactly. I never thought Nuke was cool, but I'm like, wow, I did not know you could do this in comic books. Like, this is not Superman moves the Earth out of the way of a comet. It's
right.
It's kind of, I don't want to say deep, but it's, I mean, Nuke specifically is sort of a Rambo-esque caricature of people returning from Vietnam, and sort of the MK Ultra notion that people are getting experimented on and all the cults and stuff. And he's not even the point of born again. He just shows up and it's like, wow, that's a weirdly compelling character.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, to lay out some of the broad strokes of this arc, essentially it involves Karen Page revealing the Daredevil secret identity of Matt Murdock, which is basically makes its way to the Kingpin, and the Kingpin.
Yeah, apparently she got paid $130,000, and that got the Kingpin in a little bit of a pickle.
I see what you did there. But it basically involves Matt's
34
life.
Felonies.
Matt's life getting ruined. He loses his ability to practice law. His apartment is taken away, his bank accounts are frozen, and he essentially becomes like homeless and increasingly paranoid.
Yeah.
And it kind of involves all of his friends getting alienated from him, as well as later on there is a plot to basically have Daredevil framed for doing terrible things by having the Kingpin finding basically a mentally ill person to be the Kingpin, or to be the Daredevil, to dress up in the costume and everything. And
which we saw in the Netflix show, like the Dexter, right. So, Poindexter character, I think.
Another sort of limited or related plot thread has been Urich from the Daily Bugle investigating like all of this and sort of trying to unravel it and figure out what's going on. I think those are the sort of like the big picture, you know, 30,000 foot view of this.
Yeah. I mean, he hits rock bottom, gets stabbed by like some random, not really random thug, but like gets,
no, it's Turk.
It's Turk. Right?
Turk. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like Thanos comes and stabs him. It's like some dude, basically, right?
But Turk is a recurring. Turk is a character.
Yeah.
Yeah. In both, like, and in, I think he's even in DC, isn't he?
I think so. Yeah. Is
he? Yeah. Yeah. I think he should. Like, I think, as I think, and I think Miller is the one who put him in both.
I believe so. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get to Miller's contribution to.
Because I think he's in the year one, right?
I think so too. I'm not
at
sure it's a guy that may as well be Turk. It like
exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get to Miller's mind frame in a little bit.
But he is
Turk is a nexus.
He is according to Wikipedia, he is in a bunch of the, you know, Marvel stuff, but I don't think he's officially in. I do enjoy that at some point he has an Infinity Gem.
What? What?
There's a 2018 storyline apparently where he finds the mind gem and starts using it for himself.
Okay, I really regret. Okay, look. As described in this comic book, he's hardly like a real match for Daredevil, right? Like Daredevil's kind of not at his best when he gets shivved. Anyway, long story short, he ends up in hospital, reconnects with his mother, who's now become a nun. And is, guess what? Born again after hitting rock bottom. And then goes on to what? Beat the crap out of the king. Like the only possible thing that comic book heroes can do, which is punch somebody really hard,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so that's a little sad. But it's an interesting arc for the character, and I think, if anything, it in some ways diminishes Matt Murdock. Like, he starts going bananas. Yeah. He's had a few bad days, and I get it. But I felt, at least reading this in 2023, that his decline is kind of fast, and he could have just asked a lot of people for help.
Right.
And he didn't.
Superheroes traditionally bad at that.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True. This is probably the worst case scenario, though.
I mean,
I mean, he starts, you know, he deliberately pushes his friends away,
right,
instead of asking them for help.
Well, and it felt like
and then he had, like, beats the crap out of a cop and everything.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it felt like the kind of the worst of what the tropes of the superheroes were in that day and age, right? Because fundamentally, what comes down to is that he doesn't want to reveal his identity, right? Like, he doesn't want to reveal that he's Daredevil.
Oh, right.
I think to a large degree.
Yeah.
And that's why all this is happening. And, you know, I think that was kind of one of those cardinal rules, right? Like, oh, you can't tell somebody, like, by the BT dubs, I'm Daredevil. And I think that was echoed a little bit of the problems in the Netflix series, too, which is, like, so much of the tension comes from secret identity shenanigans it creates more problems than it solves sometimes.
Yeah. On the other hand, a Daredevil-y / Ollie Queen kind of level guy. Kind of makes a bit more sense, right? Like, Tony Stark, well, I was going to say he can say it, but then he got missile attacked, so that was dumb. Like, there's not a lot of upsides, right, for, like, a guy that lives in Hell's Kitchen to be like, hey, I'm Daredevil? Like, that's not going to go great.
Also, Hell Kitchen of 1988 is not Hell Kitchen of 2023.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not even sure... In fact, I'm quite confident that, like, as much as there was a lot of violent crime in New York in the late 70s and 80s, this portrays a city that is a fever dream of some far right idiots these days, right? Like, they think that that's not the way New York is or even ever was, really. There was definitely a lot of crime, but... not to the level and the sort of the corruption level that is
it's always amazing, and this happens in the Netflix series as well, though, like, how completely the Kingpin is able to control things until he's not,
right
yeah. Right, and it's a little bit of Black Convenience Playhouse going on, because it's like the Kingpin is all powerful, can do whatever he wants with no repercussions whatsoever. But then finally we find one good cop, and that makes it all better.
Right.
Right.
Which is not the way things right. work.
I will mention two things that I think were done better in the TV adaptation. One, replacing the whole plot with him replacing Daredevil with another person in this is not particularly great. It doesn't actually work particularly well. Right, it's very brief, actually. Like, they're like, oh, wait, that's not him, and, like...
Yeah, but it's even, like, he's kind of phoning it in. He just wants to make Matt look, or Daredevil look bad, until he can get his hands on Nuke, because Nuke's, I don't know, 3 days out or something, like, he can't...
Yeah, right,
he's
he's, guess what, blowing up brown people in, like, South America. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But in the show, doing that with, you know, Dex, who is basically Bullseye, is super compelling and creepy and weird, right?
So,
like, that elevates it.
Yeah, it's
a
much
lot
more
better.
right
yeah, because
the whole, I mean, just like Matt seeing, you know, not seeing him, but, you know, encountering him for the first time and just like, what is going on
right
here?
Yeah, that fight scene is
guy,
one of the best.
This guy is just, you know, off the rails.
He's like not really that confident.
Many people should be locked up.
There's a lot of great fight scenes in that Netflix show. Like, I think it's probably formative for the way, like, a lot of, certainly, I think Arrow and then that sort of set the tone for the way you do these kind of things, right? And I think for like a little bit of the time in the early seasons, they were ratcheting each other up, and then Netflix stopped doing the show, and effectively, so did the CW. So, and then they had another 5 years. But Matt, that office fight between Matt and Poindexter is incredible.
Yeah.
Like the, he's really just picking great. Up like office supply fighting is.
And Matt just constantly can't get out of the way. Like he's trying to hide. So, he's trying to hide behind desks and pillars, and he's just bouncing things wildly and still nailing
it. It's so great. It would be funny if it wasn't like, oh, this is bad news. Like this yeah. show is not.
It's kind of his first. I think it's his first sort of. Is his first superpower?
He might have. He might have had a fight with
because he went up against
Shinobi or whoever. Like what? Yeah, some ninja. Right, you know. Right, right. Yeah.
The other thing I was going to mention, which is a big part of this plot, obviously, and is alluded to in the Netflix series, but not directly addressed there, is Karen Page.
Right.
The Karen Page plot here is it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, you could write an entire, and people probably have written entire theses on how women are treated in this
movie. I don't think Frank Miller probably has a reputation for super feminist writing. No. Let's put it that way.
Mean, yeah. Because there are four main women in this. One is Karen Page, who is a drug addict who sells out Matt's
secret identity
for money. One is in order to buy more
literally
drugs,
a saintly
she,
mother.
She moves to California to be in the movie industry, flails out, becomes a porn star or something, and then sells out Matt's identity. And it's like, I get
for heroin. Let's be clear for heroin. Also, that is the part
and never any better in the whole thing. Like, you know, even in like, I mean. He has to get her well. It's just awful. The whole thing is terrible.
Yeah.
And then, so then there's his mother, who is, you know, the Virgin Mary, basically.
Right. I mean, she's literally a nun. Yeah. Like it. Yeah. Yeah.
Then there's his old girlfriend, who is, you know, basically, you know, sort of implied, you know, it's sort of skeevily implied that she's cheating on him with, you know, kind of like, you know, leaving him and then hooking up with Foggy.
That is a very like, Frank Miller-y take on it.
Aren't they terrible what they're doing to poor Matt?
No.
It's like,
Matt sucks.
Yeah, not really.
Foggy's a nice guy.
Relationship. Matt was probably an awful person to date in the first place. Yeah. Anyway, and then the other one is this brutish assassin, nurse who is owned by the Kingpin.
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, do you know what? I'm pretty sure we're going to get at least three or four fingers broken every time we say Matt Murdock. Somebody's going to come break our fingers. Ben Urich. Okay, you know what? I think Dan, you're right. Let's go character by character first. Karen is deserved, I think. This is effectively the character of Karen that was given, right? Like, I don't know if it was
an existing character. No, she was an existing character before, right?
Karen Page,
But I never actually read any of the.
Yeah, but in like the Gwen Stacy kind of like, oh, here's somebody I got a crush on.
She's the love interest, but not really a character of in her own right, I think.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I would imagine. Like I said, I have not read those earlier.
Just to use Wikipedia's summary, in her first appearances, Karen is the beautiful secretary for the law firm of Daredevil's alter ego, Matt Murdock, and the mutual love interest of both Murdock and his partner, Foggy Nelson.
Yeah.
So they're
also,
basically,
the two partners of that law firm should know better than to be trying to bang their secretary. I think that's that's not superheroing.
Let's just say that's not unusual for lawyers.
She disappears for a while and then shows up in Ghost Rider for a while, apparently. Okay. But yes, I think she's not given a lot of complexity, previously in the way that many characters of that era, the love interests are not super well fleshed out.
Right.
Also, she's apparently killed later in the 90s. So,
Of course she is. I mean, it's.
Yeah, right.
When you've got nothing but pouches and bullets, somebody's going to catch a bullet. That's all.
Yeah, there is in fact an entire what if story that is what if Karen Page had lived, which is itself a little weird.
I mean, I don't know. I was sorry, I was about to make a contemporary politics joke, but I will will refrain.
So there's that. There's Karen.
So there's Karen who
all around horrible.
I think was treated better in the Netflix show, but still not great. To be honest,
I think that's pretty good. I mean,
by season three, though, they go into her backstory and it's like,
I don't think it's that bad. Do you think that's that bad?
I can't recall it enough.
I find that. I mean, like, if you're gonna accept the comic book version and say, okay, she does have some demons in her past. That is, you know, she was dealing drugs, but she was also like the boss, right?
Yeah,
she wasn't.
Yeah,
she wasn't like a, you know, she was a victim of her boyfriend, yes, but she was not a victim in ways other than that. Plus, whereas this Karen Page is just like,
yeah,
victim across the board and has very little agency and is simply
gets a real Frank Miller
leaf
treatment
in the middle of
Karen in the show. At least, you know, she's got her sort of like, she sort of becomes a reporter working with Ben Urich, right?
That's
and
true.
Then she worked for the paper, and then, you know, she's got like a different career path and storyline. That's, and then she works with Frank Castle, right? Like, there's other stuff.
She has agency
going on
and she's
there.
Interesting for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I just don't know if I need to go back and about. Didn't she kill people at some point? Like, there was some kind of weird shootout that felt like a little. Oh, well, Wesley her, wasn't the first guy brother. I killed. I killed,
oh,
people,
that's,
you know,
that's right.
Whatever. Like,
yeah.
I loved it when she killed Wesley.
I love it when she killed Wesley,
sure,
too. Yeah. Wesley's also in this comic book, sort
he
of.
Is.
I mean, he's a very different character in this comic book.
But he's recognizable. I felt like, oh, yeah, that guy. I remember that guy from the show.
Yeah.
But he's much better on the show.
Yes.
He's much more fleshed
out. I mean, they both seem reasonably intelligent, have a certain amount of agency. I mean, definitely dedicated to the cause. And they're fixers.
You know,
they just try to get things done without, like, you know, they don't have laser beams coming out of their eyes. They're just like, I'm just going to pay people and try to maneuver things to make it all work.
I'm going to kill a lot of people to get what my boss wants accomplished.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. I mean, we're talking about characters and like we mentioned Kingpin. I mean, I'm fascinated. Like, I love the idea of Kingpin as a, you know, kind of above the fray villain. Like, he's kind of fun to watch in that fashion where he's like manipulating events and like paying off people, and he's insidious, right? Like, because he's everywhere. I feel like I don't entirely get his plan here to, like, I'm going to drive Matt Murdock insane. You know, it's like a little mustache twirling when it feels like there's probably easier ways to do this, but
it's still 1986 in comic book terms, right? Like, so it's kind of a big,
it's a very comic book villain kind of plot.
It's like, what if I did all of the same things, but somehow had a vaguely interesting motivation and rationale behind it, I guess. Frank Miller is the guy that gave Kingpin a name, Wilson Fisk. He developed the character from more of just being like a Spidey character into one that's, I mean, if you had to pick, would you say Kingpin is a Spidey or a Daredevil character?
I think he's kind of one of the rare villains who does. He's kind of both. I mean,
yeah,
I think
he's not Doc Ock, right?
Really,
like, Doc Ock
is
100% Spidey, the Lizard.
Right. He's not like Spider-Man's arch enemy,
right?
And he is Daredevil's kind of, which is odd because he's.
I mean,
like,
I think if you're going to pick, well, Bullseye's probably Daredevil's comic book wise his biggest. You know,
I'd say enemy, so. Yeah, right? I mean, he killed Elektra. Yeah. That's. Guess what? Yeah. There's no greater motivation for John Wick types.
He has
than,
abilities that are similar in many respects, and it's just more of a parallel between the two of them.
Right. But I do think
Kingpin has become a little bit more. I mean, I think that's, you know, certainly because of the show. He's viewed as and you know, in the the movie.
I do think though that Spider-Man can get to a Spider-Verse with all this weird, trippy, hippie stuff going on. And I don't think Daredevil can. And I don't think Kingpin really can, despite, I know, being the bad guy in the Spider-Verse movie. I think that Kingpin and Daredevil are such a natural match because neither of them are so overly superpowered.
Right.
They can't take down buildings. They're like, no,
they're
none
larger
of that.
Than life, but they're not like super hero.
They're in the same
much.
League kind of
they're
thing.
They're both street level ish.
What I'm saying
way.
About Spider-Man is like Iron Man's giving him an iron spider suit and he's shooting laser beams out of his web shooters. Like, there's stuff that Spidey does that is beyond this kind of thing. Daredevil is a guy that gets beaten up by randos in an alleyway and just keeps getting up until they fall down, I guess. I don't want to say good, but there's an expectation that Daredevil is going to struggle a lot where other heroes will not, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is part of the Catholicism of his character, I suppose. But, yeah.
Right. He has to suffer.
Yeah. Don't we all? I'm Catholic. I feel like I'm suffering a lot.
Being on this podcast.
I mean, I can't tell you how much blood of Christ I've drank. But it's not helping. I have yet to be saved.
Well, it's a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I know. And I'm off work, and we didn't do our cocktail idea. Yeah. But anyway.
Keep it going. Well, it's only 1:30 here.
What do you mean again? You're the one that's actually... Okay, who cares? Whatever.
I know. Yeah. Let's see.
I think they do... I mean, this is an interesting arc for the Kingpin. I kind of liked it. I mean, again, I make fun of it for being a little wacky, but I think it feels more interesting than he's just like, I'm just going to have Daredevil shot, right?
I like that they both
do, but doesn't seem particularly interesting.
I like that they both kind of go insane. Like,
he's like obsessed with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Like originally sort of the notion comes to Kingpin, like, okay, I can mess this guy up and I'm going to take it. And eventually he ends up stuffing him in a cab, killing the cab driver with a billy club, Daredevil's weapon, and then sinking the cab in the Hudson, which is super
confusing. Like, well, I guess Daredevil killed Matt Murdock?
According to Frank Miller, you could walk across the Hudson just on the surface peaks of little cars that have been sank with dead bodies in it. It's silly, right? But when there's no corpse, Kingpin starts going bananas too, right? Like, it's right, one of those weird mind games where, like, they are both starting to go completely and utterly paranoid.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why it works. It's like this whole thing
exactly
is devolving into, like, both of these people are bananas. They're insane.
they're obsessed with the other, yeah.
They're obsessed with the other, and everybody's making each other worse, and it is crazy. And I think that's what makes it the Kingpin part of it work for me, is that this is a guy that is accustomed to getting everything once. He thinks this is an easy win, and it's not. And it just drives him insane. And ultimately it leads to his downfall. Which is weird, because Miller would have us believe that driving Matt insane somehow brings him to Christ, I guess. I don't know. Like, there's literally a born again moment with a nun in attendance, his mom, his immaculate mother. You know,
which again, another storyline that they basically pilfered for that third season of the TV, the Netflix show.
Yeah. Pilfered strong. I mean, they used it. It was good.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make that comment.
I know, they adapted it. And
did he get
adapted.
Paid?
I just liked the word. Sorry.
Yeah. Did they get
I'd forgotten until recently. I believe that's Joanne Whaley, who also was more recently seen in the Willow series, reprising her role from the movie there.
Do you guys feel like we've got a whole episode of just handing out Pipers? That...
pretty much.
Yeah.
Or Davis's.
Agent Davis's. Oh my God.
So Agent Davis, right. We should just.
We just want to throw this in the middle of our Daredevil discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because he should be on the Daredevil show. Definitely. I've seen him without a shirt on. He's definitely, Daredevil villain material is what I think. Yeah.
He is. Anyway, so if people don't know, if you're watching Ted Lasso, he is plays Zava.
And to be clear, Agent Davis, who is a somewhat side character in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Partnered with Piper.
How can you not?
And he now plays Zava in Ted Lasso.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm done explaining the stupid rating system. But a Piper Award is given because
you're not done.
I'm not done. We just don't. I don't know. We haven't watched anything for like a long time. So whatever. But Agent Piper was, I kind of forget the actor's name, but
Brianna. Oh,
She played both an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and an agent of Argus. Not prominent, but leading roles, like supporting roles.
DEO. She was on Supergirl.
Was it DEO?
Yeah, but she was still in like basically black suited agent on multiple on a DC and Marvel show at the same time, which was amazing.
Yeah. Loved it. Anyway, so that's why we call it a Piper. A Davis Award is this guy's got chops. He's actually funny.
He's really good. Yeah, yeah. He's great. I mean, the character is, it's bananas.
Yeah, it's like,
of course.
Yeah, it's like, when you watch Michael Dorn crack jokes, you're like, you wouldn't think he's like a funny guy, but he's actually, he's got chops. He's a funny guy. Speaking of funny guys, Foggy? What do we think about Foggy in this arc?
He doesn't, he's weird because he's got that, he's kind of just like, I just want to help Matt. Like, that's his only line in this whole thing is kind of like, no, I mean, like, Matt's my friend. I feel like we should help him. He's just the general, like, his, genial, like,
he,
helpful guy.
He doesn't
guy.
Do much other than that in the whole comic book, right?
Yeah, I mean, which is a little.
He is hanging out with Matt's ex-girlfriend, which.
Right.
Honestly, it seems like it's actually a pretty good relationship.
To help her out, but
Yeah, but he's just kind of flat, and I think he had more agency in the show.
He's got. Yeah. I mean, the only other thing that's interesting that happens here is like he gets like hired by like the Kingpin arranges for him to get like hired by his law firm or some law firm that works for him, basically. But it doesn't really go anywhere in this run. It's just a sort of like, I'm going to screw with him by hiring his partner and giving him a great health plan and a matching 401k. I'm so evil.
Yeah.
I kind of want to work for the Kingpin now.
Yeah. Like,
well, yeah. Sounds pretty good.
Oh, Willie Fisk. Yeah, you can sign my paychecks any day. who else have we got left? Ben Urich, I think, is a standout character in this.
Ben
Urich
is great in this. Yeah, Ben's honestly.
Kirk, he's quite good.
Other than that terrible scene where the guy, like, doesn't the nurse, like, break all his hands?
Well, better than the terrible scene in the actual show.
Fair.
Because it gives him that moment of, like, he takes the cast off sitting in the, his fingers are bust.
Park.
He's told that, like, if you mention Matt Murdock again, is basically going to have you killed, or
it's genuinely terrifying.
It's really legit terrifying, as a reporter, because it's just somebody coming up to him and being like real threatening in a pretty quiet way. Like it feels like not. I mean, in Russia, they just throw you out a window, but it's on that spectrum, right? Of like, hey, look, if you talk about this too much, things aren't going to go your way. You know, you may face some bad luck. We're going to break your fingers, literally. And he eventually sort of overcomes that fear and is he sitting on a park bench? I'm trying to remember.
He's sitting on a park bench.
Yeah, he takes a cast off and he just mutters to himself, Matt Murdock, which is such a great comic book FU moment. Yeah. I'm like, yes, right. You're the hero. Go get him, Ben. You're awesome. And I want more Ben Urich. Basically,
I think he's great.
And he works for the Daily. Daily Planet. The other one,
Daily Bugle.
Daily Bugle.
Yeah. And that was something I had forgotten. That Jameson's in this? Comic book.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Same Jameson, but less toned down a bit.
Yeah. Sorry, Dan. Cool.
A clarification question that I'm just not sure about. Not having read a lot of Daredevil. It is heavily implied that Urich knows that Matt is Daredevil.
He does.
And he never says it, but in the conversations he's having about the other people, he's like, well, this makes sense, or something. And
I'm not sure if he knew it before, or he's just a good reporter, right? Yeah. Like he's on the case look, this is kind of obvious at this point.
Okay. I was just curious.
Why don't more people know?
I think it's one of those kind of things. Although Kingpin did have, I think... So Cameron sends an envelope with the identity, and it gets all the way up to him. He sends her $130,000 through his lawyer, resulting in a lot of campaign fraud charges. And then I think he has the Kingpin specifically, This is not real life. Kingpin has everybody who touched the envelope killed. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty good Kingpin move.
And that's what happens with, you know, that's why Karen runs.
Right. Yeah, that's sort of the...
She got her money, like, she would have been done.
I feel like if he hadn't been that jealous of that information, it all kind of would have worked out for him. Like, I guess he wants to hold that information hostage over Matt, right? Like, that's the premise of, like, the beginning of the story. And so if anybody else has it, well, he has less leverage. So he needs to make sure that he's the only one that's got it.
Also, he wants to destroy the trail back to him. You know, he wants to, you know.
Right. But if your goal is to just take out Daredevil, who cares? Anybody along that line, let them leak it. Whatever, you know, it's even more distant from you. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but again.
Comic book.
Yeah. He doesn't have a mustache, but he does have a cane with like a giant diamond stud on it or something. So,
Yeah. I do enjoy him fighting a bunch of, you know, like
ninjas,
sort of random ninja guys. I always wonder where they get those guys. Particularly in the Netflix series, I think it's in, it's either in Iron Fist or it's in the Defenders where they just kill them. Like, I know the hand is dedicated, but they're just gonna, you know, this is gonna be a sparring match, but a lot of you are gonna die. Okay, I guess that seems like a waste, but all right.
It doesn't make any
sense. I'm committed to the cause. I'll do what you want.
Doesn't make it. It wouldn't make any sense for Klingons or even Jem'Hadar. Don't exactly. do that, right? Like, there's a limit. It's like, okay, well, we're trying to train you. There's not a lot of point in having one guy murder all of the best people just because he's the more bestest. Right. Like, that's not.
You could. They still have their uses. Right. I mean, come on. Anyway. Yeah. That's an aside.
Ninjas.
Okay. Well, yeah. Ninjas. Right. Ninjas. Why did it have to be ninjas?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about Nuke or?
Well, who we left with? I guess, Nuke. And, you know, I don't know if we've covered real Matt's arc specifically, but yeah.
I mean, yeah. But yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit about how, his whole descent is a little maybe far-fetched, but you know, I'm sure there are definitely people who've had descents like that.
Sure. Yeah.
And not necessarily, you know, evil people either, but people who make bad decisions.
Right.
And Daredevil's definitely a guy who's often made some bad decisions.
That is true. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to get a good picture of Matt from this because the entire thing is just his descent basically. Right. Like so much of this is his descent that I feel like if you had been reading up to this point, right, and you've been reading the existing Daredevil run, I think maybe you have a better sense of who exactly Matt Murdock is. But I think he's a little bit... His sort of pre-downfall state feels a little anodyne here, just sort of like a very comic book, two-dimensional comic book hero. I feel like we don't get as much of his personality until he starts really hitting rock bottom, which is interesting, admittedly. But I guess I had less of a good sense. So much of my conception of that character is informed by his portrayal on the Netflix show. Like that's sort of been backported in my mind to like how I see him. That or Ben Affleck, I guess. And his arc is interesting, but more from a plot perspective than a character perspective to me.
I don't really necessarily want to defend Miller here. But this is a period where comic book characters were getting deconstructed. And that was the whole sort of take on it, right? And you didn't necessarily need to know who he was before. He was superhero before, right? Generic superhero fighting, I don't know, Stilt Man, something. Something, you know, kind of goofy and kind of fun and like, you know... Bullseye would throwing cards at you and it would sting a little, but like not be the end of the world kind of thing.
Ow.
Stop it.
Who throws cards?
Not like Gambit.
Yeah, not like Gambit throwing cards. Yeah, you're not around anymore after that, Shuri.
I really don't like Gambit. Anyway.
Oh, we're going to have to fight. We're gonna have to fight.
Really?
It's fine. I love Gambit.
Oh, my
God. Did you not listen to our Superhero Spectacular from many, many years ago where I defended Gambit?
No, I was choking down some crappy gumbo.
Wow.
I don't know what that means. I love gumbo. I don't know.
It was great. Yeah,
it was gumbo without okra, I guess. I don't know what to say.
Again, I think
the roux wasn't drowned. That's the kind of
that's no good. Yeah. That's no good. You have to have kind of grown up like me with the X-Men
the 90s. I know.
Gambit, although terrible in that, is a delight.
He never did it for me. Anyway, long story short, I think like a lot of this stuff, like Year One or Batman Returns, The Watchmen, to some degree, Neil Gaiman's work, Judge Dredd. There's a lot of this is just like, let's take concepts and sort of deconstruct them and reveal, in some cases, I think for The Watchmen at least, reveal the fascism inherent in the idea of the Ubermensch. And in this case, sort of play with that idea. Like, I'm not entirely sure where he lands on that concept. Like, I don't think there's a thesis statement to this so much as an exploration of, what would it mean? You know, like, what if the world was this crime-ridden place where Spidey has to go sling webs every night and stop muggers 8 hours of every day, which is insane. Like, that's, you know how many muggers you have to have Spider-Man catch, like, spend 8 hours a day catching them?
It's a union gig, okay?
It should be, the way Spider-Man beats them up, and not to mention the cops. Yeah, they should probably unionize. It's heightened and weird and unreal, but I think just jumping into it cold, being like, you know what, here's a hero that everybody knew is just another generic hero, and we're going to do something interesting with him. I think that makes sense. I think as fast as Matt's decline here is, don't forget these are coming out every month.
Right.
So that's like, you know, half a year of like, okay, he's been going down a real dark hole. Or I think, issue 4, I think, is where he really, 4 months of like, man, this guy's been down on his luck for a while. I think that sort of way of looking at things sort of helps you understand the writing and the arc and sort of the context in which it was being produced.
Yeah, that's fair. I again, like I said, having gone into this cold without that context, you know, it's not that it is super complex and needs a lot of background to understand it, but I guess I felt like Matt's character resonates more for me because of the situation he is in rather than the person he is.
Yeah.
And again, I think some of that is very much of the era. And it doesn't make it bad. It just makes it, he falls a little flat
starts,
for me.
It starts pretty quick.
Yeah. Because, well, some of it's just like, this is a guy to whom bad things have happened. Right. And it's like, I guess I feel for him because bad things are happening to him, but I don't have a personal connection with him in the same way that I think, characters are potentially drawn in.
Yeah. You're more of a Bruce Wayne kind of guy.
Me personally, yes.
It was really lovely last weekend when you just came up here in your helicopter. And
well, I just really wanted to make sure that you guys get to take vacations with me on yachts and fancy private planes. I think that's important.
I didn't know
what
we were talking about.
Have I missed extracurricular activities for the group?
We're not supposed to be talking about
that. Who are we left with? I guess Nuke, right? How do we describe Nuke? I don't know.
He's a weapon. He's a weapon.
Yeah.
And
would you call him a nuclear weapon?
You feel for him in a way, even though he is a
terrible person,
nightmare. Right. I mean, he's a
He's clearly an anti.
He's completely messed up, but he's also been completely manipulated.
I feel like he's a very anti-war kind of statement, right? Like, this is a very damaged vet, and our government has done very awful things to him, which kind of makes me think he's sort of Miller's more libertarian side is showing up here, yeah. Where it's like, mm-hmm. Look, here's a control killer that we're going to unleash upon our own citizens. And that's clearly bad. And he's hopped up on all kinds of drugs. And one of the conceits of the character that I love, and I don't think Netflix did it, maybe they did. He takes red, white, and blue drugs. And
yeah,
each
I think
one
they do that yeah. in the show.
Yeah, like red yep. makes him angry. Yeah. I forget. White makes him cool.
I forget. Yeah, in the show, like one of them's supposed to bring him back down again.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's be clear. Also, he only doesn't appear in Daredevil, and the Netflix shows he appears in Jessica Jones.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah. That's right.
The actor's great. I really like that performance. And I think he started as a cop in that show. Like he felt like a little sympathetic kind of thing. Yeah,
he's like a beat cop. Yeah,
not quite as manic.
That actor, I believe, earned a Piper for playing Human Target on Arrow.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
We give him out left and right. That's what he said. We give him out like reds and blues.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was a fascinating little touch. Like, you know, it draws on the history of militaries trying to use methamphetamines or whatever other kind of chemicals to either supercharge their soldiers or to the detriment of the opposing forces, effectively, right? Like I think some of the LSD research was about like, what if we drop? What if we just get everybody high? And that's I kind of love that idea, right? Like if you could drop a bomb and turn everybody's guns and weapons into like. I don't know, umbrellas and flower pots, that'd be great, right? That's not a horrible way to do things, but it turns out chemically altering human beings' minds is not a great idea, and here's an expression of it, yeah. And did you read the bit where Cap comes in and has to beat him up?
Yeah. And I like that
Me too.
Part a lot, kind of, because, you know, Cap is pretty upset about the whole thing as he should be.
Right. Which is great. It's just like Daredevil's kind of there, but he's outclassed. Cap shows up and beats the crap out of this guy. And Cap is like,
the Avengers show up. Yeah. So that's how he gets involved in the whole thing. And so Tony's there and Thor is, you know, you just see Thor for a second.
I mean, this guy's not going to have, he can't hold a candle to like, Thor or Iron Man, you know, maybe Cap could have a fight with him. But I kind of love the speech that Cap gives, which is like, okay, this is, I see me in this. The way to go. But for the grace of God goes me kind of thing was the attitude. And I like that. I thought it was kind of a weird and thoughtful sort of addition to a plot that. I don't know if this story needed it, but it worked really well in the context of it. Do you know what I mean? Like a heightened reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the you know, the bringing in somebody else who in this fulfills a role of like authority and sanity, because you come to not trust Matt for a while
with good reason
throughout the course of this run for very good reason, and he is back on a much more even footing, but not everybody else knows that.
Right.
They're all kind of like, Matt seems to be off the rails, what's going on? And so you've got Cap there to sort of represent that view and say, I'm gonna need a little bit more from you to make sure that everything is okay here. Yeah. And also I've got this problem that I need to deal with.
One of the
things it's my bailiwick.
One of the things I would appreciate about the deployment of Captain America, I'm sure there's going to be counter examples, but I can't think of any right now, is that he is most traditionally used to, bound upon the truth and liberty and justice aspects of the American dream and not any specific American foreign policy or judicial policy or anything like that. He really is like an avatar of the things that America finds and the world and everybody should find best about that country and culture. And it just going back to 86 and like seeing this again, I'm like, man, that's just great. Cap's great. He's got a great heart. Good work. Great writing. Nuke is, I think, the, you know, they'd paint him on the side of cop cars is what I kind of think of Nuke.
Yeah. He is an interesting character. I feel like, you know, the kind of the way the MCU has gone with, like, not wholeheartedly, but certainly, but US Agent is another character that sort of falls in the same category, right? Of like, here is a good side and the bad sides of the patriotism versus sort of nationalism, right? Like, upholding the ideals of a country versus taking that and weaponizing it to the point of toxicity, which is basically,
I have an aversion to patriotism because I believe truly that it leads to nationalism. And I'm not sure that,
I don't disagree with you.
I'm not sure. There are definitely times where I feel like, hell yeah, that's great for my country or your country or any, you know, like soccer. I'm like, hell yeah, US did great. I don't want to use a gateway drug thing because guess what? Also from the 80s and a very problematic policy, mostly designed to keep people of color down. At the same time, there is some value to it, but it is to patriotism, but it's like a little bit of the dark side. Do you know what I mean? Like, I lightning struck one guy. That's okay. And all of a sudden, you're, I don't know, building a fleet on Exegol and making stormtroopers red. I don't know. I don't know how that goes. I don't know the plot of that, but it feels not a slippery slope, but there is some there's a definitely a cliff there at some point, right? Where if you go over it, bad. And I think it's interesting that these characters explore that, and Captain America particularly sort of explores that in a few times, and they always keep him somehow on the side of being I'm struggling for better word than right, but he's right. You know, he is really truth and justice and that kind of thing. And,
he's always been a character who is about the ideal.
Right. Yeah. So he upholds the values to
about the,
and it's coincidental.
The reality.
Right. He upholds the values and to a certain degree, it's coincidental that the country also upholds the values. Right. And that is what causes him to endorse the country. He's like, wow, this country agrees with me about what the good values are. But when the country starts to shift. Yeah,
exactly. I think Winter Soldier showed that, right? We're just like, wait a second. You guys are building airships that are just going to murder a whole bunch of people using Minority Report tech.
And he didn't like it. He didn't like it in Avengers when they were building weapons using the weapons of the whatever they were called.
The blue beam.
The Nazis. Hydra.
Yeah.
The blue mind stone thingy that was in
the blue Hydra guns.
The power stone. Yep. Power stone. There we go.
Laser Hydra laser guns.
Not the power stone.
No, it's space, Hydra
it's
stuff.
The, right? It's the space stone actually.
Oh, okay.
That's what's in the
Tesseract. Do you know what I think is important about this conversation is that we determine
which stone,
determine the magical stone
people at home listening.
Yeah, let's just abandon our.
Going to be yelling at their.
What
at their
was
phones.
That? The one that Turk had. Abandon our. I'm not clear on that.
I don't know. Yeah, that I don't know.
Let's abandon our introspection and our sense of exploring our own culture and our effects on society to bicker about which magic stone was used.
I'm sorry. What is this? Is this podcast about?
Oh, Star Trek mostly. What do you mean stop it? I got the editor. I'm editing this.
Couldn't stop it. Yeah. Couldn't stop it if I wanted to.
So Let's just, okay, let's go over the whole arc of this, and then maybe, I don't know if we have time, but we can, well, I'm just looking at the clock.
Hell of a time to find out now.
And then maybe share some ideas quickly about how this could be adapted. I'll go first. I think this is a really great arc. It is a seminal comic arc, right? Daredevil exists today effectively because of this arc and people riffing on that and working with that kind of thing from the character. I think Frank Miller has obviously done incredible work. Like, there's a bunch of people in the 80s that sort of reset comics and made them are what they are today. They, in some ways, made them more serious. I don't necessarily think that this is a serious take on the human psyche, but in some ways, it's like the Last of Us, or I don't know, some other video games that came out with incredible stories that people would be like, oh my god, video games can tell stories. And I think this was during a period where people were like, oh my god, comic books can tell stories. Which seems silly, because guess what? Sequential images with some text seems like the most straightforward form of human communication. I admire this work a lot, and I, in some ways, even admire how flawed it is. It is where it is flawed. It is going 110%, right? Like, it's doing its thing, and I don't think we would have the environment today with comics and stories of the depth that we know without this kind of storytelling. And this was a very early example of it. And despite it being kind of basic in some ways, I think it really, really worked and set a template and a temper and a new tone for the way that you can tell stories in comic books with superheroes. I think it's a brilliant run, and everybody should read it with the proviso that, guess what? Written in the 1980s by a guy that may not be some weird bouillabaisse base of libertarian and fascist. I don't know how to describe it, but it's definitely worth your time. So that's my take.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, I hoped it would be more complex. I read it very much from the viewpoint of today, right? Like, I don't have any nostalgia for it. I didn't read it back in the day. This is the first time I ever read it. And reading it in 2023, you know, it's you can see the, like you said, I think, Guy, well, that it set the tone and the grounds for a lot of more complex stuff being done later. And you can see where it reaches in those directions. But certainly from the vantage point of looking back 30 plus years later, 30? I can't do that.
That's cute, man. It's like 40. It's almost 40.
Yeah, I mean,
1986.
Almost, yeah, I guess that's true. Almost 40 years later. You know, it's weaknesses and vulnerabilities show through too, right? Like, in the same way that reading anything from, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, right? You're always going to find things that are like, that didn't age well. That was, or, but also you can see what places where it's like, oh, you know, knowing the context of what's happening at the same time, you can tell what this did that was interesting at the time, even if looking back at, like, you know, in the same way you look back at art, right? And it's like, well, obviously, like, they did it this way. It's like, yeah, but nobody had done that before, right? So, like, it's not that was, you know, you have to look at it within the context of the ground that it's breaking at the time. And I think I get that element of it, but it is definitely tough to, like, look past some of the really terrible stuff that did not age well and, you know, pick out the parts, which I think they actually did pretty well in the Netflix show, of saying, like, these are the things that are worth borrowing and adapting from this and make are still compelling as a story now. And we can sort of gloss over some of the other stuff because it didn't age as well.
Would you recommend people read it now?
I think as long as you sort of know going in what right. is hap like what you're in for, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine. You know, again, I don't think we're recommending it wholeheartedly with no caveats. Obviously, I think we're right. talking about it with a like, hey, be aware this is a product of its time, and there are a lot of things in there that are problematic. And noting that, it is still an interesting read. I don't know if I would like wholeheartedly recommend it to anybody who's like, hey, I want to really get into comics. What's the best Daredevil thing I should read? I have a harder time with that because I can see a lot of people being turned off if this is the first Daredevil thing you read.
No, like, that's like Ms. Marvel or Squirrel Girl or something.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. There are way better things to like, if you are just interested in the what comics can do instead of like, there are more modern takes I think I would prefer. And, you know, I think a lot of people who proclaim these like, oh, this is the great era of comics or whatever, and look back at these things, it's you should not. Reread that. I yeah. think, yeah. you know,
there's brilliance there. It is transformative, enough idolation. Like it's fine. Like what they did is amazing. Don't need to dwell on that. It's not like the be all and end all. Sorry, John, right. I cut you off to ask for Dan's sort of recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo what both of you said, really. I do, you know, when I read it, I loved it. I mean, I thought it was amazing. And then, you know, over time, it's like, oh, yeah, that's not good. Yeah. That's a problem, too. Oh, okay. And there was a sort of an educational process that I went through in my arc as a human being that happened to take place after I read that comic book. And so with the benefit of hindsight and further education, it's clear what the problems with it are. I still really like it, even though I know what the problems are. But yeah, I'm not sure it would be one that I would recommend. I mean, most of Miller's old work is kind of the same. There's a lot of similar problems in Dark Knight, and it's hard to say enthusiastically to, you know, recommend any of that stuff from that period for sure. And I haven't read any of his stuff recently. So the thing that I despite them using the name for this upcoming series, I wonder really how much
that was the thing.
This is exactly what I wanted to get into.
Since most of it's been done already, they're probably not going to rely on it very much. It's just a naming convention.
Yeah, I think that was exactly what I was going to comment on. This was the so much of this has sort of been strip mined already for adaptation that there actually isn't much. They're not going to remake what's already been done. That would be silly.
I would think that would be a waste of time.
So I don't know exactly what elements, if at all, you borrow from this to do that. I think there are perilously few that are either this is not worth adapting and this has already been done.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there are some things there to work with, right? I think there's his secret identity thing. That's probably valid for that character. But more than that, I think just the concept of being born again, right? Like the whole... what was he before, and then what is he after? I think in some ways the Batman did that in a way, like not completely the same story, but you know, there's just basically I'm going to beat the crap out of people, and then that's dumb. I'm going to help them. I suspect there may be some sort of arc like that after Matt gets beaten down. I do really think that this season is long, not because in episode one, Matt's going to be curled up in a corner of an alleyway with a bottle. I don't think that's the way it's going to go, right? Like we need to be introduced to the character. We need to know him. Then we need to see him descend and hit rock bottom. I think there's been... is it rumors, Dan, my favorite sentient ChatGPT avatar, is John Bernthal in the Daredevil?
Yeah, we've discussed this. I believe that is currently the report.
I know we've talked about it, but I don't know if it's but sure, or
I don't think rumored. It's sure, but it is highly rumored from seems to be from reputable sources.
Yeah. Well, he's a great nuke surrogate, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But the my understanding is that this show is a little bit more episodic too, so it doesn't seem
like it lends like it, yeah, I mean
like it lends itself to that story
to,
arc.
To throw it in there as well. Do we think part of this is just a cute way for Marvel to acknowledge there was already a
like
Daredevil
Homecoming.
Show.
It's like Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right. There's a meta aspect.
Oh, you guys think there's like nothing to do with the story that we just read. But like
I think there's a very good chance there's absolutely nothing to do with it.
I'm kind of cool with that. Despite liking this story and thinking that it could be repurposed. That makes sense. Just born again. Why? Well, because that's a term that Daredevil uses, and now it's a Disney thing. Right. Yeah. Huh.
There you go.
Yeah. We'll see.
We will see.
Okay. Well, that was a spectacularly unimpressive.
What a waste of time.
Never mind. Why did we watch? Why did we read this whole thing?
I just really appreciate that people listen to us every week for the ultimate thing of like, I guess we'll see. That's it. There's no real conclusion to this. Tonality-wise. Let's just... I think we can knock this out in a couple of minutes. Do you think this will be a violent show? Like, on the scale of... I don't know. Man. She-Hulk to Punisher on Netflix.
Wow, that is there's a lot of range in there.
Right. I mean...
Yeah, no, I give you.
It goes through WandaVision and the Cap series, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Like, there's a range in there. Like, what is your closest sort of, like, point on the map of that sort of spectrum of... I don't want to call it seriousness, but like, you know,
I think it's in, I mean, it's certainly in between. I think it's probably like they've mentioned, I've seen reports, take from it what you will, that like, you know, with Vincent D'Onofrio and saying like, oh, it's still going to be a violent show. And I don't know how much of that is about assuaging the fan base that really was like,
right.
is a little sorry, bloodthirsty. But
also Vincent D'Onofrio is violent just with one look. Like that guy is such a great actor that you can be like, oh my god, I just got beaten down for 6 hours by this one guy because he just looked at me and said one word. Like he is such a compelling villain that I think he could make anything feel
you don't need
more
him to
brutal
be physically violent to be effectively violent.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so I guess my feeling is it's not probably going to be as comedic or lighthearted as She-Hulk, but I think it's still going to stay within the bounds of the MCU. I don't think this is pushing new ground. This is my total guess. I don't think it's going to push the envelope on MCU being like, okay, this is the ultra-violent MCU show. It doesn't read like that to me.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's certainly... MCU shows and movies where we've seen people get beaten up and, you know, bloodied and whatever.
I would believe it more of Deadpool because Deadpool is its own thing.
Deadpool, so I think, will push the bounds. Yes.
Yeah. Deadpool 3, I think, will be, you know, on a par with the previous two.
Yeah.
I would consider it even an outlier.
Deadpool,
for the
I'm
MCU
totally
by
giving
far,
it.
Right.
Whatever. That's its own thing. Also, Ryan.
Yeah, but it's still produced, you know, this one is still produced by Disney, so.
Right.
You know, there has been question as to whether or not it will be like the
other
I think it probably will be, and I think this will not be to the level of, I mean, you're not going to see anybody impale his own head on a spike.
Right.
Yeah.
In this.
Yep. Yep.
Or even
But I would believe, you know, you look at.
You didn't see the guy.
You didn't see it. Well, they were about to, though. You know,
you would look at the trademark stuff from like the hallway fights, right? And it doesn't need to be brutal, but the choreography and the way that they're.
I think
I'm curious to know how much stunt work is being like, did they, I wonder if they hired anybody from that, the show, or like, I mean, those people all work very gig to gig, I imagine. So
I think there was something about the guy who, because they had the guy who worked as Cap in Winter Soldier working, on at least the first season, I believe, of Daredevil. And I think there was something came up recently where he said that he is not involved in the new show.
Gotcha.
But he's also probably, you know, he's like 10 years older. So I don't know if that has anything to do with either.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. But I do think it's
a stuntman forever.
I do think you would look at that and the way that basically both Daredevil and also Charlie Cox in specific, you know, movement and fighting styles and stuff like that. And I think you probably want some continuity of that because also it distinguishes that character. It gives that character a specific style that doesn't then collide with other characters. He's not a Captain America, right? He is perhaps closer to a Spider-Man, but somewhere in between. And I think that's what makes it interesting. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think that is... Any last thoughts you guys have before we sort of wrap up here? I don't know how long we want to go. There was other stuff we discussed talking about, but we've already logged an hour, an hour plus, so...
yeah, there was a bunch of trailers, but whatever. Let's put that off.
All right,
whatever. Yeah, I don't think anybody tunes into us for timely news.
We'll spare our fine readers.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, hey, big news from 1986. This story kind of problematic. Also, kind of great.
Still problematic. Checking in almost 40 years later.
That's right.
Yeah.
All
right. And with that, do we have any? I thought I had seen a letter at some point. I don't, Guy, I don't know if you remember.
We did. We had a letter from Andy, who, I love that you're like, I thought we saw a letter. He just wanted to say, big shout out to Jan Moran.
Jan Moran? Who is Jan Moran?
Just wanted to send a shout out to Dan Moran for telling the world, or at least part of it, because this is a cat who knows how large of readership is. About The Capture. Just such a good show. With a very depressing relevance that nobody's talking about. The second season is maybe better than the first two, which is very interesting. So that's nice.
Thanks, Andy.
Somebody likes your opinion, Dan.
You know, it's gratifying. That's what I live.
Is it? It feels novel to me. I don't
a little bit to me too. That's true. Yeah, and there was also, I think, a tweet that came in where somebody was talking about Dwayne Johnson.
I'm looking
and Shazam.
At it now. I think the issue with Dwayne Johnson and Shazam is that he famously doesn't want to play bad guys anymore. Side on his side. Get it? That makes sense.
It occurred to me that one of the reasons that the Fury of the Gods movie didn't do so well is probably because of Black Adam. Because that one bombed so badly, it was not very good.
Yeah, nobody went to go.
And the dude's wearing basically the same uniform.
Yeah.
So I think
that's
that
a
made
hard marketing
impact.
Gig. Plus all the DC upheaval, and I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot of factors that probably conspired to have that.
If you
want to
watch Fury of the Gods, it's out on digital now. You can buy
it. Is
it
out now?
But I think the rental. Yeah. The rental is like $20. Yeah, right now.
I'll wait for the $5. Or the free streaming.
Or free.
Yeah.
Mark continues, if he appeared with Shazam, he'd have to be the bad guy, and he'd have to lose. Yeah. On top of that, he would lose to Zach Levi, who wears a muscle suit. Exclamation point. Yeah, that's going to suck too, right? I think Johnson has little respect for Levi based on that aspect alone. Yeah, and I get all of this.
Not much love lost.
I get all of this. I do. At the same time, whatever, man. You're all playing superheroes. So, none of this is real.
Right.
Could you beat up Zach Levi? If you did, that'd be front page news, because that's bananas. Like, that, why would you do that? That's crazy.
Right?
Like, the whole notion is really, really kind of silly and sort of emasculating in its machoism. If that's a turn of phrase that even makes sense. Whatever. Who knows? Who cares?
I like that phrase, actually. Yeah.
Emasculating.
It does make a lot of sense, emasculating, and it's machoism.
I think that's... I think if I've done one good thing today, it's it's that turn of phrase.
It's say that phrase.
Yeah. Anybody else want to take a blue or a white?
I just want to puff and call it a night.
I want to puff and call it a night.
Oh, no.
I have to get lost. I got to get out to your part of the world way more often. This is an Adobe office. I mean, like,
it's where the puffs grow.
Well, I mean, my old business partner and like my current coworker Parrish works out there, so I gotta,
find
a reason. God knows,
come out for an ex-coders.
How about you come out here for my marriage? Is that my wedding?
Well,
wow, you escalated quickly.
Jeez, yeah, I know. That's not like a
I'm honestly like, oh god, I don't want to ask Moles to fly. Like, that's literally crossed my mind as I'm trying to plan.
I went out for Dan's, so.
So that's saying. It.
The precedent has
that's
been
it.
Set. The precedent has been set.
That's it.
His, okay.
His quota has been filled.
I thought you were about to say so.
No, that's
I've used. I've used all of my.
That can only go to one.
That's right. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just gonna go take a few reds and get over it.
Okay.
All right. We should wrap up. We have like we said, we got a lot more to talk about, which we'll come back in a subsequent episode and discuss the recent plethora of trailers for upcoming superhero properties. Also, I believe there is a soon to be airing episode of The Flash that features our old friend Ollie Queen, so we may or may not discuss that as well.
Yeah,
we're finally
recording
content.
This on April 7th, by the way,
just to timestamp it,
it'll go like a week after. Sorry.
So that's where we're at. As always, you can reach us at biff@theincomparable.com or on Mastodon. We're at biff@zeppelin.flights. I would like to thank, of course, my co-hosts, without whom there is no show. John Moltz, thanks for being here.
I'm going to pull a guy and I'm going to go long here for a second.
Sure. Good. Yes.
because it's just occurred to me that we need another award, which is I'm going to call a Frakes because Frakes early on in his career played Captain America.
Oh yeah. He did.
Like appearances and stuff like that. And was like at some like physical fitness thing at the White House or something
that's
like
great,
that.
I love that story.
So Frakes, Captain America and, you know, Captain William Riker. We're going to give a Frakes to, who is it who plays Brad Boimler?
Oh, it's Jack Quaid.
Jack Quaid,
yeah. Right. Jack Quaid, who is going to be the voice of Superman in a new, animated Superman show.
Who's also on The Boys.
I'm having a hard time imagining
so
that.
So it's not his.
but still Boimler. Yeah. Boimler. I would like him to just like lean into the Boimler voice for Superman. Yeah. That would be
very whiny,
hilarious.
Yeah. That would be great.
The whiniest Superman ever.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
Thanks. A lot of fun.
And that's all we have time for.
No awards.
No, I was about to make a joke that I couldn't make land. That's all. Yeah. Boimler. Okay. Cool. Whatever. He's on The Boys, is what I'm saying. And trying to formulate a joke about The Boys without being like and a little over is gonna.
He's Dennis Quaid's son. So there you go.
Sure. So he has been to the center of the earth, I guess.
That's right.
Is that the way that works? Yeah.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening and putting up with our shenanigans. We appreciate all your support on this show. We do it for you. We do it for your readers. Really appreciate it. Thank you. And we will see you next time. All right, let's rock and roll.